Thank you, Peter. Yesterday afternoon, I was sitting at home, and the phone rang. It was my mother. She says, "Hi, what are you doing?" I said, "Well, I'm writing my talk for tomorrow." She says, "What are you talking about?" I said, "Sex." She said, "That's nice, honey. Goodbye." I know it may seem a little unusual to a few of you, not many, to have me speak about such a complicated and touchy subject from the platform on a Sunday morning. A number of years ago, Kennedy Schultz, my predecessor, many of you knew him, did a three-week series on sex, and the title of the series was, "Oh God, Oh God, Oh God." It was great, you know. the way I feel about it is, if we don't feel comfortable talking about sex in the same place that we feel comfortable talking about spirituality, that in itself shows that we have a problem, that we have a problem. Because God knows we talk about it everywhere else, all right? We talk about it with our friends, we talk about it at work, we talk about it at the gym, we argue about it with our partner or our spouse, and even when we aren't talking about it, we're thinking about it, okay? And it's been that way since we were 12 or 13, and no matter how old we are, it's probably still true. An Irish friend of mine from Dublin said there's a saying in Ireland that there does come a time when sex is not all that a man thinks about. That time comes about 6 hours after he's dead and buried, okay? It's probably the same for women, but, you know, I don't want to go there. I might get in trouble. There's also an obvious metaphysical reason that I want to talk about this subject, and that's because it's something that we think about a lot, and anything we think about a lot affects our life a lot. Of course, some of us may not be doing as much about what we're thinking about at this point in our life as much as we used to, but we still spend time thinking about it. In fact, the two subjects that we think about the most, the topics that seem to cause us the most problems in society today, are sex and money. And it's not just society today. It's been that way since Adam and Eve were negotiating for apples. That was the money part. And then wearing fig leaves or not wearing fig leaves. That was the sex part. It goes back all the way to then, and it hasn't changed much since. Now, if you think about it, both of these emotional triggers, because that's what they are, both money and sex, have some very significant points in common. We never seem to get enough of either one. That's one. We admire or we resent people who are able to attract plenty of either whenever they want. And most significantly, no matter how much or how little of either one we get, we very rarely get as much joy and satisfaction out of what we have as we could or should. In other words, with sex or money, we always want more, even though we demonstrate over and over that we don't know how to make intelligent use of what we already have. And as a result, this wonderful physical human experience, this fundamental life-giving way in which we connect with others and experience great pleasure, has also become, in many ways, one of our most widespread and difficult challenges. Just read the paper. There are more lives ruined, more crimes committed, more careers destroyed, more politicians exposed, and more families broken up every day over sex than any other single reason. So with that being said, the question is not, what should we do about it? Because too many self-righteous people are already giving us their opinion on that, and the results, I have to say, are fairly unimpressive. We're finding out that preaching abstinence and chastity may be a nice idea, but statistics show that it doesn't seem to be working very well. In fact, I read recently, I love this, it said, just saying no prevents teenage pregnancy the same way have a nice day cures chronic depression. Okay? I like that. So what they're saying is, avoiding an obvious problem doesn't solve it, it just prolongs it. So trying to stifle the power of sexual desire is like trying to stop the tide. Even the noble Saint Augustine, one of the more prudish of the Catholic saints in the 5th century, made the very understandable prayer early in his days of piety, "O Lord, give me chastity, but do not give it yet." Okay? True, it was in his writings. All right. So whether we want to admit it or not, all of the sex-based problems that exist in the world today, and there are many, exist because we are afraid of our own sexuality. We are afraid of it because we do not understand it, and we do not understand it because we are too embarrassed or uncomfortable to talk about it. So the real question is, why are we still so embarrassed, angry, or confused whenever the topic comes up? I mean, if sex has been around as long as we have, why don't we understand it better? Or even better, asking it this way, why are we not trying to understand it better? Why aren't we doing that? Now, we talk a lot about sex in society. For example, a lot of our humor is based on sex. But if you look at all of those dirty jokes that people talk about, the off-color humor, as you know, many of us have heard, you soon realize that they are either based on anger, cynicism, or they're being used to make fun of, which is another way of saying judging and criticizing, some particular group other than our own for their sexual views, preferences, or orientation. Now, we also display a lot of sexual material in our television shows, our popular magazines, and our movies. Like, what was one of the most recent movies, big blockbusters? Sex and the City. They're having a sequel. It was successful, okay? It even gets into our news programs. But most people looking at this abundance of stimulating material are not really thinking things through. They're either frowning in disapproval, laughing uncomfortably, or they're salivating. They're doing one of those three things. In other words, very little of what we hear or see in the mainstream media is helping us to become any smarter about sex. We aren't learning how to enjoy it more, we aren't learning how to make it more fulfilling, and we aren't learning how to use it to bring us closer to our partners. Instead, we are using it to judge and to control each other and to set impossible and completely unnecessary standards that slowly but surely are driving us apart both individually and as a society. Now, one obvious reason that our society has evolved this way is because of religion. Dr. Schultz, years ago, used to love to say from this stage that religion has been ruining sex for centuries, okay? He said one of the big revelations coming out of Catholicism from him was when he finally realized that he shouldn't be taking advice on sex from a man who wears a dress. That's what he used to say. You know? You had to know him to love him. He was great. But what he meant when he said this was, and he was a very wise man, is that those noble institutions that should be helping us to combine the best of our humanity with the best of our spirituality, which is where our sexuality should reside, these institutions have instead been working very hard to stifle our mind and our body's desire to create and experience physical joy with another human being, and to bury that desire under a very unnatural, unloving, and ungodlike layer of guilt, shame, and hypocrisy. For the most part, society and religion have done this in the name of morality and theology, but they've also been perfectly willing to use whatever else they needed to use, social, legal, and even financial pressures to control the debate and in the process to control our behavior. Now, the reason they do this is because they realized very early on, and very astutely, I might add, that openly and honestly discussing our perfectly natural sexual needs and desires, by which I mean discussing them rationally in our churches, in our homes, in our schools, between ourselves, and especially with our children, that openly and rationally discussing these things is going to raise some very powerful questions that demand intelligent answers, and they realized they didn't have any. They didn't have any intelligent answers. That's why the challenges that many of the mainstream churches are going through today over sexual issues are causing them so much difficulty. Because with all the Bible thumping or Quran thumping or whatever they're thumping, one quote they seem to have missed is, "With all thy getting, get understanding." Get understanding. That's why they fail to see that understanding our sexual nature is the only way we're ever going to overcome all of our sexual problems. Now, there are two aspects of our consciousness of sexuality I want to talk about today. One is the way that we deal with issues outside of us, including other people's attitudes, beliefs, and prejudices, like those held by many of the churches that many of us came out of. And the other is how we deal with what is inside of us, including how we can use spiritual principles to express our desires and to get over our hang-ups. That is, how we can include sex as an important part of any joyful, loving, mutually respectful, and creative relationships. So let's look at our social environment first. The world out there, society, whatever you want to call it, because that's the ocean in which we all swim. You see, most of the problems we run into that deal with sexual freedom are not really about sex at all. They're about judgment and prejudice. They're about power and fear. They are about shame and guilt and self-denial. That's what they're really about. For thousands of years, sexual attitudes, sexual taboos, and sexual stereotypes have been used by the people in power to control people that they disapproved of or to control people whose beliefs they condemned. So they passed laws affecting every aspect of what should have been private interactions between consenting adults, including arranged marriages, marriages between different races, same-sex marriages, and restrictions against divorce. They also made laws governing premarital sex, extramarital sex, homosexual sex, and even sex without partners. And in every case, men and women were treated very, very differently. Now, these are just a few of the major points of contention, but all of these issues are based on the question, who decides how we use our own body? And the only answer that we teach here is that the way you choose to use your body, or I choose to use mine, and whom you choose to share it with and in what way is completely between you and that person and the God of your understanding. That's it. In virtually every case where sexual behaviors have been condemned, there was a dominant group, usually political, cultural, or religious, who were rejecting something that they criticized but did not understand. And behind that prejudice, the thing that feeds it was nothing more or less than fear and insecurity, which are nothing more than misguided beliefs about our divine physical and spiritual nature. Because our sexual nature seems so hard to control, which isn't surprising because it's not supposed to be controlled, it's supposed to be expressed. Because our sexuality is such a highly charged area of our humanity, touching our emotions, touching our lifestyle, touching every single part of us, this precious and powerful part of our nature keeps showing up as a major battlefield between people with different beliefs. That's why there's so much volatility, so much anger, and even violence that shows up whenever the prevailing sexual rules of society, they're not God's rules, they're society's rules, are challenged. People who wish to express their lives openly, especially when it comes to sexual preferences and sexual orientation, are often seen as a threat to those people who see all sex, whether they consider it normal or abnormal, as dirty, degrading, or dangerous. Of course, it doesn't help that the only sex that some people consider normal is a legally married heterosexual couple doing it in the dark for the sole purpose of making babies. That's what they consider, and not enjoying it any longer or any more often than absolutely necessary. Okay, that's the rule they do. This is what some people use to define morality. Morality. It's interesting to note that these are usually the people who define promiscuity as the behavior of anyone who's getting more than they are. That's their definition, okay? So the truth is, this limited, closed-minded definition of morality is about as immoral as it gets. People who think this way and act accordingly towards others are confusing morality with judgment, self-righteousness, and meanness of spirit. Of course, there are always going to be some people who are more interested in moralizing and loving, usually because they have a lot more experience moralizing than they do in loving or being loved. These are people who, for some strange reason, have come to believe that God gave us sex in order to test us. They believe that sex is dangerous and that it can and does cause serious problems and that it is a necessary evil to be avoided as much as possible. The funny thing is, it's all they think about. It's all they think about. In most cases, these same sexual problems that they are afraid of are what they end up creating in their own life. Their belief becomes their experience. That's what we teach here. That's why when they finally explode, as they always do, remember Jimmy Swaggart, Jim Baker, Ted Haggard, the list goes on and on and on. When they finally break down, which is what happens, their perfectly natural but repressed sexual desires end up creating for them exactly what is in their consciousness, fear of sexuality. It creates great danger, great problems, and severe pain and punishment in their life, not from God, but as a natural outcome of their beliefs. You see, it doesn't matter if you're quoting the Bible, the Koran, the Constitution, or the Pope. The acceptability to God of any sexual activity is entirely a matter of what is in the consciousness of the people directly involved. If you think about it, understanding our sexual nature is extremely important because sex affects the health of the world. Healthy-minded, loving, joyful sex contributes not only to the health and well-being of the people involved, it also makes the world a better place to live. People who are really making love are not only not fighting, half the time they're making up, which is just as good as not fighting, all right? People who are hugging are not hitting. People who are loving are not hurting themselves or anyone else. So any act of love between consenting adults carried out in an atmosphere of not only love and desire, but of mutual respect, mutual enjoyment, and mutual appreciation always makes both parties much happier. And happy people tend to create a better world for themselves and everyone around them. Which leads me to the other aspect of our sexuality, the inside part, the consciousness part. Because a lot of the pain that we suffer related to sex is not imposed on us from the outside, it comes to us from the inside. It comes from a jumbled up set of confused beliefs that we somehow have absorbed by listening to other people's messed up beliefs going back countless generations. Too many of us are still filled with fear of all sorts of dangerous possibilities related to sex. We started out when we were young, worried about what our parents would think if they caught us amusing ourselves. Then we worried in high school about social disasters like getting pregnant or getting somebody else pregnant. Or we worried about getting caught doing something that we were ashamed of, even though we didn't know why we were ashamed of it. That was the next step. Today, we're worried about catching any one of a bunch of well-publicized sexually transmitted diseases or having our indiscretions filmed and put on YouTube by someone with a cell phone, all right? And when we do get into a relationship and sex becomes a natural possibility, we're afraid to ask for what we want. We're afraid that we will be rejected or laughed at. We're afraid that we won't be good enough and they might leave us for someone else, or we're afraid they won't be good enough and we're going to be stuck with them. Those are all of the things that bother us. They're all the things that bother us. There are even people who are still afraid that they might go to hell for experiencing lust in their hearts, even if they don't do anything about it. It's a very strange situation. We have had these powerful feelings from the day we were born, and we still don't quite know what to do with them. So the question now becomes, as we evolve, how do we deal with the sexual fears and insecurities that we all have, and we all have them? How do we replace them with something better? Because we're going to have to, you know. That's one of the most powerful principles that we teach here. In every area of our life, if we want to grow, if we want to evolve, we have to eventually learn to face our fears and see them for what they are, which is false evidence appearing real, F-E-A-R. Most of us have heard this. We have to see the truth, the greater truth behind our fears, if we're ever going to rise above them. And overcoming our fears about sex ought to be very high on our list of spiritual priorities, because those fears are keeping us from something very important, which is our ability to express love physically and spiritually in a way that is uniquely our own. Those fears that we have, based on nonsense that we learned at a very early age and kept alive by our attachment to a society grounded more in ignorance and prejudice than information and compassion, those fears are keeping us from loving whom we want, when we want, in the way we want. And they are doing it from in here more effectively than any laws out there ever could. We need to get clear that our God-given sexual desires are not something to be feared or controlled. They are something we are meant to express. They're an extremely important part of our ability to feel the union, the oneness, the connection between our physical body and our spiritual inner self or our divine self. That means that there must be a way for us to express these desires completely, openly, joyfully, lovingly, honestly, and beautifully, no matter how old we are, what our sexual orientation is, no matter what our marital status is, no matter who we are doing it with, and no matter how we are doing it together. I mean, think about it. This infinite intelligence, this power that can do anything, created us with this capability that feels very good. You know, let's be honest, it does. So that must mean we are meant to enjoy it. I mean, spirit is neither cruel nor dumb. If we weren't supposed to enjoy sex, it would hurt. Okay, wouldn't you think? All right. We have also been designed so that our desire to use this capability enters into our mind on a fairly regular basis. So that must mean we're supposed to do something with it. We were not created by a foolish or incompetent God. All creation has a purpose. All creation has a purpose. As mature adults, and we have to mature into this, of course, we have been created with all of the hormones, all of the desire, all of the body parts, and all of the opportunities to make love on a regular basis with whomever we choose. So it could not possibly be the intent of a loving, intelligent God that we spend our lives taking cold showers and thinking about Mother Teresa just so we wouldn't use what we've been so freely given. All right? That was my argument with the nuns. They never bought it, but that's the way I felt. Now, I do want to give you one warning. All right? This teaching can cause problems with your sex life. It can. Not by making you feel guilty, but by making you more aware of who and what you are. God does not care who you are sleeping with or what you're doing with them when you're awake. But once you begin to see your own value as a spiritual being whose only purpose is to bring more love into the world, and once you begin to understand, and I begin to understand, that every person in our life is also a perfect expression of spirit, meant to express love in their particular way, it makes us look at sex in a totally different way. For one thing, it will make you more selective about whom you are intimate with. It'll also put sex in perspective. You may stop seeing it as the most important thing in your life. In fact, it may not even make the top three. You may also start noticing that loving yourself and loving all of life and everyone in it makes you appreciate the rest of the world a whole lot more. Now, it's not going to make you want to give up sex. It just makes you give up the idea that sex is the only thing that's important. And that's when we know that we are starting to grow. And when we do make love with someone, then we will know that we are being honest with them, with ourselves, and with the spirit of love that brought us together in the first place. In fact, that's the major difference between having sex and making love. They're both fun, but one of them is physical and quite normal, while the other is spiritual and definitely preferred. Spiritual love, expressed both physically and emotionally, is one of the greatest feelings we are ever meant to experience, because it is the recognition that love is the only thing we can ever share or ever need to share with another human being. And in that sharing, however it comes, if we do it well from the spiritual center that we all have, we not only find a greater connection with that person, we find a greater connection with God. And that's what it's all about. This is the truth in your life, and this is the truth in mine. And so it is. And so it is. Thank you. Thank you. All right. As we know this, take the ideas that resonated with you. I give them to you freely. Set aside the others. Take a breath and let us know this together. Let us know that even though we are physical beings in a physical world, we are spirit, surrounded by spirit, connecting with spirit every time we are with another person. This is true with our friends. It's true with the clerk at the grocery store, the people that we are on the highway with, and it is true when we are deeply intimate with those we care for most deeply. We are capable of expressing love mentally, emotionally, physically, and spiritually, but it is most powerful when we express it in all of these ways together. So we recognize that the love we feel, as powerful as it is, has many different forms. We have love for our parents and love for our children. We have love for our friends. We have love of peace, love of life, love for our pets. But the love we feel for a significant other, for the person that we are with, in a deeply intimate and emotional moment, that love is a precious gift for us both, and we need to see it as a sacred trust. As we begin to recognize this, we realize that we must love ourselves intimately before we can love another, and that we must open ourselves to that intimacy, that into me see, that awareness of the spiritual truth of what we are, and that as long as we are treating someone with respect, courtesy, and honoring their spirit with ours, that we are doing nothing wrong. So I invite you to take a few moments in the silence of your own mind, and in this silence, in this space, in the center of your mind's eye, no matter where you are in your life, I want you to see you as a spiritual being closely connected to another spirit. It could be the spirit of your partner or spouse. It could be the spirit of someone you love deeply who is no longer on this plane because that love never goes away. It could be the spirit of someone that you will meet when you are older or when you reach a certain point in your life. The spirit does not need to be a certain person. It needs to be the spirit of love that you will find with whomever you're with. Take these few moments in the silence of your own mind. With gratitude for this awareness and a clear understanding of its sacred significance in our life, we accept this part of our life experience. We honor it. We use it wisely and well. And as we do so, we allow ourselves to feel a greater sense of self. We no longer fear our past. We no longer fear those who criticize us or judge us based on their own fears or ignorance. We come from the power of spirit within, recognizing who and what we are and what we can give to another person. This is our truth. With a deep appreciation of this awareness, we accept it completely and we release it into consciousness, knowing that this is our truth from this moment on, and so it is.